You are listening to episode number 39 of the Effective Statistician podcast, How to Work with Key Opinion Leaders. Welcome to the Effective Statistician with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, the weekly podcast for statisticians in the health sector designed to improve your leadership skills, widen your business acumen, and enhance your efficiency. Do you sometimes struggle to convince your business partners? Do you sometimes feel to be excluded from key discussions? If you want to improve your influence within your organization, then we have something for you. The Effective Statistician Leadership Program is there to help you. We'll start this course next year, in 2019. So if you have some interest in learning about this, check out our homepage, theeffectivestatistician.com/course, and register your interest there. In today's episode, we'll chat all about key opinion leaders, KOLs, KDLs, TLs. There's lots of different acronyms for them. But what is their role, and how can you best work together with them so they feel good and you win as well? This podcast is created in association with PSI, a global member organization dedicated to leading and promoting best practice and industry initiatives. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to special interest groups, the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to a new episode of The Effective Statistician. Today we're talking about cults, KOLs, key opinion leader, key thought leaders, or thought leaders, however they are called. Actually, In my life as a statistician, I haven't come across too many key opinion leaders, or so what we could call key opinion leaders. But I'm sure, Alexander, you did. Did you?
Yes. Hi, Benjamin. Yeah, actually, key opinion leaders have been kind of on my agenda for quite a while. As most of my career I've spent in the so-called medical affairs area, so more the late phase area, and lots of customer facing activities. So that's why my interactions with key opinion leaders, thought leaders, or very often also abbreviated KOLs, KTLs, TLs, or whatsoever, is quite frequent, and it's always a very, very interesting experience.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I mean, I've been working with some of them as well, and I see. But as a matter of fact, the COO statisticians usually work towards the pharma company, who then is directly supporting the QL. So I mean, there are exceptions, but yeah, no, I agree. So, but who are QLs? I mean, I know investigators could be, but what else is?
So QLs have quite wide range of activities. And by the way, if you hear some background noise, we are recording this year in the summer, and I really need to open the door, the window, because it's so hot. So even if you hear that in winter, I think they have predicted something like 36 degrees here.
Yeah, it's Celsius.
And so there might be a little bit of a background noise, but I hope it's not too disturbing. So coming back to the key opinion leaders, they can take lots of different roles. And of course, they are customers very often. They are very often prescribing physicians that treat patients themselves, or that have patients within the clinics that they run, or the hospitals that they run. And so they actually see patients, and therefore they also usually prescribe medications or therapies that the pharma companies are working on. As they are usually quite experienced. You know, if you're a leader or opinion leader or a thought leader, you need to have some, you know, very, very established expertise in a certain area, very often a certain niche of the medical field. And as such, you, as a QOL, very often help pharma companies to actually better do their job. Because there's, of course, lots of expertise within the pharma companies, but these people that we are talking about are very often world-class experts, and they have dedicated their life to this specific area very often. So it's nearly impossible to have this knowledge in-house. And especially when there's lots of pharma companies working on a specific area, it's nearly impossible to have that in-house. So they are advising the pharma companies on all kind of different things, from study design to interpretation of the data, what the data means in terms of the prescribing physicians, how best to communicate the data, all kind of different things. As you mentioned, very often they are also investigators for clinical studies, and sometimes principal investigators. So as I said, you know, they are very often very closely involved with the clinical data, from the design of the studies up to the publications of the studies. And as such, they also are very often authors on the publications. Quite naturally, you know, they have provided their expertise to the design of the studies and to the interpretation of the studies and to, you know, putting everything into perspective. So that's another way, another role. Further, when communicating about these results, they also speak at conferences about the data, or sometimes they are also hired to speak at specific pharma organized events to talk about the data and to explain the data, what they mean to their peers. And then they also sometimes have very kind of overarching things that they are doing. So they may work on guidelines, for example, on certain treatment guidelines, as they bring their world-class expertise into these guidelines to help physicians, prescribing physicians that need, you know, will not have ever the opportunity to build up these expertise to help them make the best treatment decisions. And then they also play sometimes a role more on a approval thing. So for example, they may be associated or advise also regulatory bodies, or HTA bodies, or maybe they are even a member of HTA bodies. And as such, they're sometimes even government employees, or they are seen as government employees. And so that, of course, has then also some further legal implications.
But from what I hear is that you're still mainly talking or primarily talking about medical background, so medical persons and people that are in whatever role as you describe, but with a medical background.
Yeah, mostly these have a medical background. Very often they are a professor at a certain university with a medical background. In some aspects, sometimes they could also come from other areas. So for example, when it's about HTA, sometimes they could also have more kind of as a health economy background and advice in that regard. But I think usually kind of the key opinion leaders that we meet will have a very medical background. Mm. Yeah. Or maybe a little bit of a biological background, but they are often then both have a degree in biology and in medicine.
Yeah. And their role is a medical one then more.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So this is like who that person could potentially be, but what about the interactions? So what is the interaction that you usually have with them? So, and I mean, obviously, what are the pitfalls? What do we, you know?
Yeah. So let's maybe first talk about the interactions that you as a statistician can have with them. So where you usually run into these are advisory boards. So these are group meetings where pharma companies invite a couple of different key opinion leaders. Could be just, you know, one or two people, but it also could be, you know, a dozen of key opinion leaders. So, but in that range, so that you can still have a meaningful discussion with them, and it's quite interactive. Usually, these advisory boards. In these kind of advisory boards, exactly what we just discussed happens. Yeah. So the pharma company shows their study design and seeks for input, or shows the data and seek for input in terms of interpretation, what they think about it. You know, where are maybe, you know, gaps in the analysis, other things, or maybe better ways to interpret the data, or different ways to show the data, or, you know, where to further then publish the data. You know, is that something that is relevant enough for top-tier journal, or, you know, is that something that is maybe not so relevant? What are, you know, how does that fit into the literature, for example? So these kind of things. Another thing where you can run into key opinion leaders is, of course, medical conferences. So if you're working in a specific disease area, I strongly recommend that you also attend these relevant medical conferences there, because it's really good for, of course, for knowledge gain, but also very good for having interactions with these key opinion leaders and building their relationship and learning from them. So, and at these conferences, very often these pharma companies will set up, you know, smaller meetings with these key opinion leaders to discuss about various topics. And it's that can be quite interesting. So especially if it's, you know, about a certain project that you're working on, it's quite nice to be at these conferences and then to be within these meetings.
Isn't this like usually like planned in as a study from a study level?
Yeah, that could be planned in from a study level. Mm. So these conferences just offer a very, very nice opportunity to meet with these people, because, yep, you know, if it's an international conference for disease X, Y, or Z, all the relevant people will be there. So it's very, very easy to meet them with rather low effort. Usually, of course, the very important people will have quite a busy schedule. You can still kind of meet them and, you know, between the sessions, or in the morning or in the evening, and speak about projects. But sometimes you also have, let's say, project-specific kind of meetings with these key opinion leaders. So kind of something like mini advisory boards, yeah? So where you maybe for a specific study, you meet with just one or two advisors to then only talk about this specific project, either at the design stage or at the data readout publication stage. Another area is speaker trainings. So, and I think this is not a an area where traditionally statisticians have been strongly involved in, because very often kind of these things happen, you know, when all the data are already published and things like this. But I have seen that having statisticians at these kind of events very, very much help for the customers to understand the data better and to understand the pitfalls, understand the limitations. And these speaker trainings are really where you invite from the different countries people that then later speak on behalf of the pharma company in pharma company organized events. And of course, they need to be familiar with the data that they speak about. And with these, with the pitfalls, they need to be, you know, able to answer questions from the audience about these. So that's another area. So
basically, it's a study specific affiliate training, let's say, so that the for local affiliates or for local
Could groups, be study specific, but could also be kind of therapeutic area specific or molecule specific. Okay. Yeah. So let's say you have you launch a new drug, and in this area, of course, you want to inform all the different prescribing physicians about the data from the phase 3 package. And then you need to have these speakers that, you know, basically communicate your data, you know, in a more kind of small group settings, and that are then able to put these data into perspective. And these people are then, these speakers are then centrally trained usually. Yeah. Actually, one other thing where I think it's really good to get in touch, just as a side note, and that may not be directly with kind of key opinion leaders, but could also be with key opinion leaders or with you know, just the usual prescribing physicians, is to get in touch with them when you have it right with a sales rep. So
we discussed this before. Great experience.
Yeah. So I think if you have never seen this side of the business, I very, very encourage you to do that. It's a great learning. But you know, sometimes it's difficult for statisticians to get actually into these settings, these advisory boards and things like that. But it's, yeah, it takes a little bit of time and additional effort to get into these meetings.
Hmm. But actually I do, well, from what I heard is that the statistician, the pharma statistician is usually invited to advisory boards, at least in my history, the studies that I was working on, that the it wasn't me, but it was the study statistician who was attending the advisory board.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon.
Yeah. I think there's a very, very good reason for it.
Absolutely.
Because the statistician is usually the only deeply methodological trained person in these rooms, and thus provides very complementary knowledge to all these different things. So imagine you have, you know, the physicians from the pharma companies there, and then you have all these physicians, these external physicians, the key opinion leaders there. And of course, they are all medically trained. Yeah. And my experience is that the view of the statistician is highly valued by especially the external key opinion leaders, because very often they will not have access to statisticians very easily at their institutes where they're working, or at least not to, or maybe not to statisticians that are specifically trained in these kind of areas. And so as a statistician, you shouldn't be kind of thinking minor about yourself, but seeing these kind of strengths. If you, for example, compare yourself with your colleague from the medical department, you know, I would foresee that they potentially have much more problems in these areas because, you know, they speak with their peers, but these peers, you know, their medical colleagues have much more experience in terms of these specific diseases. You know, they are professors on these diseases. They, you know, have published maybe hundreds of publications on these kind of things. You know, they have invested years or decades of their life into these specific things. Whereas you as a pharma physician, you know, maybe you have previously worked on complete different indication. Yeah. And you're just, you know, jumped into this quite new. Of course, you know, maybe the your company data better than the externals, but the externals have so much more knowledge. So I think there's no reason as a statistician to go fearful into these kind of meetings. But remember your strengths, your complementary knowledge. And I think that also gives you advantage that you actually can ask really nice questions and therefore contribute.
But before we go more on the mindset for a statistician on, you know, and how to interact with this, what are other surrounding rules or, you know, things you should consider when you work with a QL, meet a QL or talk to him?
Yeah. So there is lots of rules, actually. And it's all under the big umbrella of compliance. So the if you go back in history, well, there's lots of stories that you probably hear from your older colleagues about how pharma has run the business kind of in the last century. And that is, of course, very, very different from how it's run today. And there is, you know, you need to be very, very careful in how you react with these people because many of these will be seen as government employees, or maybe they are not factually, but, you know, more or less legally they're seen as that. So bribery rules and these kind of things all are effective here. And so it's really important to be aware of these different compliance rules. One thing that I think usually helps is to have someone, if you speak with a key opinion leader, to have someone that is from the medical affairs department, medical science liaison, or, you know, someone else, a local physician from your company, together with them, because they will be aware of the local rules that apply to this physician. Yeah. So of course, you can't be aware about, you know, what are the French rules, the German rules, the UK rules, the rules from Denmark or the US or whatsoever. Yeah. So as my recommendation is always to have someone from that is, you know, from the same location as the QL with you. That helps usually to be aware about the rules. And also when there's kind of, you know, you want to invite them to dinner or you want to invite them to breakfast, you know, for you know, in association with your working meeting, these people will be aware about, you know, whether there are any caps in terms of how much the dinner may cost or things like this. So that's really important to have in mind.
Okay, so but now let's get back to the mindset. So when you said that the statistician should be, you know, standing up and be open and really, you know, shouldn't be shy and you know, as statisticians should be just discussing. So what else would you recommend? So what is the way you should prepare to meet a KOL, and what do you usually want to get out of it? I mean, it's probably different from meeting to meeting, but so what is the aim of the meetings, and where, so what can you recommend there?
So if you think about it, you know, interacting with a key opinion leader is quite complex because they have so many different roles. Yeah. On one hand, they are a customer. On another hand, they're an advisor. And then they're maybe also an author, and so on and so on. So, first, having the kind of complexity in mind is really, really important, because it helps you to be aware about all the different interests here. From a mindset point of view, I think it's first and foremost, it's being open and being trustworthy. Yeah. So because that's a foundation of a good relationship here. And if you're not seen as trustworthy, well, you can directly stop. Yeah.
Well, this is probably applying to all other interactions, not only with key opinion
leaders. Yeah. So it's probably very, very general. But you know, these relationships are very, very sensitive. Yeah. You can't kind of, if you mess up the relationship with a client or with a CRO, well, you need to find a new one. But it's much more difficult with these kind of key opinion leaders, you know. There's just one president for the world organization that for your disease that you can work with. Yeah, so it's really, really sensitive. So that's why, you know, being trustworthy is really, really important. It's very easy to make commitments, and I always recommend to be very cautious with that, because if you give a commitment, then are you really kind of authorized to do that, and can you really hold to this commitment, can you follow up on this? And so there, I'm always very, very cautious with that. Of course, you need to make commitments, yeah? But rather than, well, we will do this as a company, say, I will follow up on it, yeah, and report back to you. So then you have given the commitment to follow up, but not the commitment that the company will actually do something. That's, you know, usually already enough. Then in terms of working with them, it can be quite frightening. You know, when I first met with these kind of people, where you think, wow, these are world-class experts, you know, they regularly speak on large conferences and large audiences. They determine the treatment guideline for continents and influence kind of how patients are treated around the world. Thinking about this can be quite frightening. And sometimes also they can be quite charismatic, and that can also be kind of frightening. But I always recommend that think about your strengths. Think about, you know, they are also just people. They need to eat. They need to sleep. And that you can actually help them with your expertise as a statistician. And having that in mind helps to overcome this fear and to be able to not, you know, freeze in front of these world-class experts when you actually meet them. Mm.
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe at this stage we can just also, or I would like to mention, I think it's basically But you said that these are just humans. I mean, obviously, so you know, sometimes you might struggle with the opinion, but at least it's But in general, I mean, we are statisticians. We are experts in specific areas. As a you know, in the data crunching people, you know, it's always kind of seen of as this, something special, something different. People, you know, usually you talk to people that are not as knowledgeable in the area that as you are, and that's basically, you know, that's how you work and how you walk through your working life, or even outside working life, and meeting key opinion leaders or meeting other colleagues or meeting, I think, just, you know, don't, even though we put this really into a one episode of meeting key opinion leaders because it's a big topic. I mean, these are not, you know, aliens.
Yep, yep.
Key opinion leaders are just humans. And still, I mean, you know, no statistician should be afraid of key opinion leaders, or nobody should be afraid of key opinion leaders, except maybe, as you mentioned before, the colleagues, they might be.
Yeah. Yep.
But otherwise, it's really, it's just, we just want to emphasize that, you know, the sensitivity of the topic working with the QL, and therefore we really, you know, moving or going through these points in such a detail. But actually, it's a meeting like every other meeting that you should prepare. You should be coming in. You have a name. I mean, we talked about it in previous episodes. You should be, you know, get into the meeting. You know what you want to get out of it. You need to, let's say, get the study designed. You need to, you know, get the interpretation of the results. You may have questions that you would like to ask, and so on. So there are aims for a meeting. So you go in, introduce yourself, and don't be afraid. I mean, you're a statistician. You're an expert, and he's a medic, and he's an expert. So yeah, two experts working together. So what's the? But actually, it's a sensible answer.
Yeah, two experts working together. Yes, I think that's a very, very good mindset to go into this. And the lots of our, you know, colleagues as statisticians may be much more introvert than these, you know, people that, you know, may go into these areas that may be much more extrovert. And of course, you know, as an introvert, you might not feel completely comfortable with that. But I really urge you to train these kind of things and to get out of your comfort zone and get into this. And that will, it helps over time. You know, it's just, you know, by doing it over and over and over and over again, you realize that you get more and more used to it and it becomes more and more normal. And so I really encourage people to embrace these situations and go into it. Yeah. And what I sometimes see at events is that people don't embrace the situation, but then kind of just hang around with their colleagues, you know. So imagine there's, you know, you have an advisory board, and all the pharma people are there first. You know, they arrived early to set up the room to check whether, you know, everything's working from a logistic perspective, and then the first advisors arrive. What do you do? My advice is act as a host. Yeah, you as a company are organizing this event, so the guests are coming, and you're the host. What do you do at home? You know, if you have a dinner party and the guests are arriving, you don't, you know, stay in the kitchen with your wife. You go to the door, you greet them. You know, you ask whether they had a safe travel and then these kind of things, you know, and you interact with them.
Offer them a drink.
But still, what then,
you know, yeah.
Offer a drink, yeah, and things like this, yeah. But despite these kind of usual things that we would do at home for a dinner party, you don't see it, yeah? So very, because people stay within their comfort zone and talk to their colleagues that they see every day rather than, you know, talk to this maybe strangers that they have never met before. Yeah. What actually can help there is that you prepare a little bit more for these kind of meetings. So that you prepare about, okay, check the profiles of these people, you know, okay, how do they look like? So, so you can connect a name with a face, where are they coming from? What's their expertise? You know, was there a recent big publication that they had? So that you have know who you talk to. You can, you know their names. You know whether they had a long distance flight or things like this, and you have some kind of material that you can talk about. You know, just on a you know, chat kind of area. Yeah, so to have these kind of more light interactions in the beginning that you want to have. Of course, you know, be aware about cultural differences. Mm. Yeah. So how people greet each other, that might be very, very different. And then, you know, just don't forget what your mother told you about being polite. It's sometimes that easy. Yeah. But, don't frown at them, smile at them, you know, give a handshake if it's culturally appropriate.
Introduce yourself, that they know who you are.
Introduce yourself, yeah. And you know, say that you are the responsible statistician, what you're doing, you know. And that will spark conversation, yeah. But really embrace it. Go into it, even if you're a little bit afraid about it, yeah. This is where growth happens, in these kind of discomfort zones. And you can, you know, decrease this kind of anxiety if you do it over and over again, and if you know, if you prepare for these kind of things.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the word preparation quite often now. I think this is really one of the key points. You know, sometimes you go into a meeting because you didn't have time to prepare, and then you know, just and you get out of it. That's fine, but meeting such people, I mean, they will understand right away, and they will not accept usually if you come in unprepared and you ask them questions where they should, you know, where they expect you to know it, or where they expect to have the background. Yeah. So it is a waste of their time. That's what they usually see. I mean, important people, they are busy schedule, and they come into a meeting explaining a statistician stupid questions about, you know, things that they should know. So preparation is one of the really key words or key things to do when you get into such a meeting. No, fully agree. Yeah.
Fully agree. And actually there's some usually some nice tools within the different companies to do that. So some company have some kind of, you know, cheat sheets before such events that you can go through, where, you know, CRM data from all the different customers are displayed. So CRM, customer relationship management. So lots of companies have these tools where they, you know, capture all the different interactions with their customers. You know, like, you know, most of the companies nowadays have, you know. And so there's also, say you can find, you know, things about, okay, has this person previously, you know, talked about this study already? Who has he met? Who already does he know from the company? You know, what's the local contact for that person? Yeah. So there's lots of information about the relationship with the key opinion leader already in there that you can look into and prepare for your interactions. So, and in terms of interactions, I think, you know, most of these key opinion leaders are very, very passionate about their topics. Yeah. So, especially in these kind of, let's say, breaks, you know, coffee breaks between within the meeting, it's good to, you know, talk with them about these things. They love to talk about it, you know.
Yeah, there's some that's really dedicated their life to the topic, and that's what you feel when you talk to them. Yeah, no,
yeah, and then they can give you much more kind of a feel for what are the problems of the everyday patient. Yeah, so what do they face in terms of obstacles in treating these patients, and that can both help you with your job. But I think it also helps you to get a better connection of why we are running these kind of studies and why we are developing the treatment. So I always find these kind of interactions very, very powerful, very, very encouraging. So, and as a statistician, you have the ability to also ask lots of, you know, medical questions that maybe, you know, your medical colleagues are afraid of asking. Yeah. That's another kind of a good thing. One other point. If you're successful in managing these relationships, that will be seen also by others. And that is also will help you with your career overall. So I've heard kind of remarks about the decisions that, you know, where more senior leaders within a company have seen, oh, he's good with customers. Yeah. He has this ability to interact in a meaningful way and provide value to customers. And that is seen. And that is something that is very, very important within pharma companies. So it's something that you can build as a skill set, and that's an asset for your career.
No, I agree. I mean, just as an example, I mean, if you, for example, have been named by one of the key opinion leaders, you know, as a successful collaboration that you worked, he or she worked together with you as a statistician, and this is being sent in an email to, you know, within the company. I mean, this is just pure gold for your career. Yeah. So, no, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, why it's useful to invest time into this and really trying to get into these kind of things. Yeah. So if you work at a company where it's difficult to get into these interactions, yeah, talk to your medical colleagues, whether, you know, at least you can, you know, sit on a side table to get into this first. Yeah. And then, you know, or maybe we can, you know, help with a prep, presentation, you know, do a presentation together with your medical colleague about the data. Yeah, so that he takes, speaks maybe about the introduction, you talk about the methodology, and, you know, some key results, and see, then he kind of closes up on the interpretation, the outlook, and things like this, and framing it. And that way, you know, you can get, be helpful, provide value, and get into these kind of things. I think the key is you need to show your values that you bring to the table. Yeah. I think I've seen very often people request to be in there and then with an argument because it's helpful for me. You know, the organizer of the advisory board doesn't care whether it's helpful for you. He cares whether it's helpful for him and the advisors. So it doesn't make sense to speak about the value for you. You need to speak about what value you can offer. Yep. So because only those people get invited to these kind of things that contribute to it.
Adding value to it.
Add value to it. And of course, for adding value, you actually need to speak up. Yeah. So,
and you need to prepare.
You need to prepare. Yeah. But you know, if you go to these meetings and then you don't speak up, then you don't contribute, then you don't add value, maybe that's the last meeting you were invited to. Mm. Yeah. So, but this is, you know, like for advisory boards, there's very, very often higher boundaries to get into this, because it's, you know, sometimes requires additional travel and training and additional costs, and maybe the room is not big enough or whatsoever. Yeah. So it's not like this usual company meeting where people maybe don't care whether there's five additional attendees. Yeah. Mm. But for these kind of meetings, the hurdle might be much bigger. And, you know, it might be that, you know, if the organizer of that meeting picks you, he need to say no to another one.
Yep.
Yeah. Because there's just limited space. So really help to get understanding of the value that you bring. And I hope, you know, what we talked about already helps you to get some of these kind of value points, you know, so that you can bring the methodological experience. You can bring complementary knowledge. You have maybe already experience with working with these European leaders. You have shown how you can, you know, bring value to them.
And you know, the company data for other studies or related studies, previous studies and so on. So there's a lot of, there is a lot of expertise you can bring in and add value to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can help, you know, the presenting physicians if they get challenged on specific points, you know, what does that methodologically actually mean? The imputation methods that you used, you know, or the analytical methods that you used, you know, another company used something different. Why did you use this approach? Yeah. And these kind of challenges are often difficult to explain for physicians. And if you are there as a methodologically trained person, you can help with these. Mm-hmm. And I think this is really, really important. Another point is, you hear firsthand what people think about your data, external people think about your data. And that is very, very useful. You know, like with all the information, if you only hear it through someone else, there's already a filter on it. There's already a, you know, interpretation on it. And you can, and you hear much more different kind of things. So you see when, you know, people don't get it in the way you have prepared the data. So you maybe need to think about, okay, we need to visualize the data differently or better. And so I always enjoy these kind of interactions because I learn so much about my data.
All right. I think we're running out of time. It was a good closing sentence.
Maybe just one kind of special thing at the end, and since we can close. I know this is a pretty long episode, but it's a pretty important topic. One last special note on the medical conferences. As these conferences are, you know, all the different companies, you know, want to meet with these kind of key opinion leaders, they are usually quite busy because maybe they also, you know, have a couple of presentations, there's chair sessions, and maybe have other kind of duties as being, you know, working in these medical associations. So it's very important to proactively organize these meetings. Sometimes, you know, you can, you know, catch someone after his presentation for, you know, short 5-minute discussion. But if you want to have a more kind of in-depth discussions at these medical conferences, it's good to organize these and maybe have, you know, special rooms where you can meet with them. It's good to engage with your medical and marketing colleagues that regularly go to these conferences. And you can join them to meet customers. So, you know, ask the people from the different affiliate organizations, maybe, you know, they may meet their customers for breakfast or for dinner anyway. And you can join them and therefore have, you know, at these kind of occasions have interactions with key opinion leaders and you know, build your relationships there. Sometimes there's also a central, person that coordinates all the different requests, because especially in very big companies, there might be, you know, different groups within the company that all want to speak with the same key opinion leader for kind of different reasons. And to coordinate that, sometimes it makes sense that there's just one person that is the central person for that. Another thing for conferences, at most of the medical conferences that I know, there's also exhibition area attached to the medical conference, where the different companies have their booths. And that's also a great place to meet people, because people will just come by and
But isn't this usually quite busy place with, you know, everyone?
Yeah, but it depends. So usually these kind of booths have different parts. They have a more kind of a commercial part and a more medical part. And usually they are somehow a little bit separated. And one part is sometimes a little bit more busy than the other. And of course, you know, there are certain periods of time where kind of everybody gets out of the session into the exhibition hall and then it's completely crowded. But there's, you know, also, you know, within the sessions, when the sessions are run, it's maybe more quiet and still some people are coming around. There's, of course, certain additional rules for these booths that you need to be aware about. Yeah, another good place to meet.
Yeah, we should make a episode about preparing for conferences. How to get the best out of conferences. I mean, I think this is, I mean, just because you touched the area now, it's been, you know, there are a lot of things that people sometimes, or even me, I realize afterwards what I missed after attending a conference.
Yeah, that's a good topic. So, by the way, if you want to learn more about all these kind of different things, you can register at our homepage, theeffectivestatistician.com. No slashes, just all one word. And then you'll never miss an episode. And in the future, we are also thinking about, you know, preparing some additional material there. So just stay tuned. Leave your email address there. And then you will know when
you get the most out of our
podcast. Episode. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Thanks a lot. It was great talking to you again, Benjamin.
Bye. Bye, Alex.
So this episode was a lot about influence. And if you want to further build these kind of influencing skills, register your interest on the leadership program at theeffectivestatistician.com/course. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks for listening. And as always, please visit theeffectivestatistician.com to find the show notes and learn more about our podcast to boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. But really, the most important thing is if you want to learn about better influencing skills, then go to the course homepage and register your interest there.